Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Another day, another U.S. record for coronavirus cases, as the Omicron variant drags the pandemic into a second winter. The country saw nearly 500,000 new cases yesterday, and few experts predicted that things would last this long or get this bad. And epidemiologists are hoping that we'll be better prepared for the next one. Helen Branswell has been writing about the lessons she's learned. She is senior writer for our partners at STAT, the health and medicine publication. Helen, welcome back.
Hi, Scott. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you. Now, the case numbers are higher than ever, so a sobering moment to look back at the start of all this, January 2020. And your number one lesson in your article is that governments need to act fast at the first signs of a pandemic. Why didn't they?
You know, the piece says, and it is really true, I don't think I'm ever going to really understand why it was that the world seemed to drag its heels in response to what was going on in China. I should note that in the 10 or 15 years before the start of the COVID pandemic, there'd been a number of health scares. And, you know, every time health authorities came out and said something really bad was going to happen, often it turned out not to be as bad as they said it would be. And I think that, you know, sometimes people are afraid of being the one that cries wolf or frightening the public unnecessarily. But it was very clear by the third week in January when China locked down Wuhan, or you know, a few weeks later, that this was a really huge problem, and still people didn't act fast enough. You know, the country could have bought more personal protective equipment for healthcare workers ran out almost instantly, you know.
Right. Well, as far as vaccines, it was a remarkably fast rollout, as you and your staff have been writing about. But as far as who gets the shots and boosters, the priority list, you write that the schemes to give certain groups early access to the doses were too complex to operationalize, too complicated. What was the impact of that? And what have public health authorities, you think, learned for the next time?
To be fair, what they were trying to do was put fairness into the system. They were trying to ensure that the people who needed vaccines most would get them first. But that's very hard to do when you get beyond the simple metric of age. You know, when you're trying to put forward people or put to the front of the line people who have a couple of pre-existing conditions, but, you know, don't necessarily show visible signs of those pre-existing conditions, or it's just very, very hard for the person who's actually putting the shot into the arm to know whether or not the person who's before them merits being there at that point.
Yeah. One of the trickiest questions of the last couple of years, as far as the science and as far as the politics, has been schools, whether to keep them open, how to do that. And you write that we have learned that the calculus for kids is just different. How so?
The toll this pandemic has taken health-wise on children hasn't been super high. They don't get as sick. There have been children who've died, but at a far, far smaller rate than other age groups. But of course, the toll on them in other ways has been enormous. You know, children being out of school for so long, not socializing, just falling behind in terms of where they would have been if their schooling had been taking place in person. There are national issues, and then there are international issues or global issues. And vaccines that are used here can't be used elsewhere, obviously. And, you know, the World Health Organization had been urging countries not to vaccinate children early on because elderly people in many countries around the world are still unvaccinated, and healthcare workers in many countries around the world are still unvaccinated. And it's taking quite a long time to get those very high-risk groups in some underdeveloped countries vaccinated. I thought it was very notable that there really never was a debate here about whether or not American kids should be vaccinated before African healthcare workers. Nobody here was really advocating for, you know, pushing kids back further in the line because there was such a keen desire to try to get life back to normal for them as fast as possible.
Finally, Helen, I took a look at some of the lessons that the experts took from past pandemics, the Black Death of the 14th century, the 1918 pandemic. Some of the lessons are familiar. Focus on inequities because they matter. Communicate things clearly. Masks work. Distancing works. Are we good at learning from pandemics?
Well, the problem with pandemics is that they are rare. Things change markedly from, you know, over those kinds of time spans. And some of the lessons from, an event that happened in 1918 are still applicable, but some are not. And for instance, air travel changes things dramatically. And I do think that there is an effort to try to learn from the past, but, you know, memories are short and situations do change. And so I do think we tend to learn and then need to relearn again sometimes.
Helen Branswell is senior writer for our partners at STAT, the Health and Medicine publication. We will link to her piece, which is called 10 Lessons I've Learned from the COVID-19 Pandemic at hereandnow.org. Helen, thanks as always.
Thanks for having me, Scott.